And good morning. This is KDNK Carbondale, February 17th, 2017. I'm Steve Cole. The Garfield County Coroner released final results yesterday of an investigation into the October deaths of a Glenwood Springs couple. KDNK's Amy Head-Marsh has more.
On October 18, 2016, 79-year-old Joseph Llewellyn was found dead in his home in Glenwood Springs. His wife, 73-year-old Mary Kent, was found nearby alive, but with a gunshot wound to her head, said Glenwood Springs Police Chief Terry Wilson.
We were initially called to a unresponsive male in the basement of his home by some visitors who had arrived from Denver. Police and EMS personnel arrived there, and upon viewing the victim in the basement of the home, immediately realized he was deceased. And shortly after that, within a few moments, Ms. Kent was found. And so then we realized we had two victims. She was at that point still alive and was taken to the hospital for treatment.
The Garfield County Coroner, Glenwood Springs PD, and the Colorado Bureau of Investigations began an investigation of the crime scene. CBI analyzed DNA samples and confirmed that there was no evidence of a third person at the couple's home who could have contributed to their deaths.
Physical evidence, scene investigation, autopsy and chemical and laboratory results all point towards basically a murder-suicide committed.
Mary Kent was flown to a Denver hospital on October 18th and died 10 days later. Terry Wilson said that evidence has shown that her husband fired the shots. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon-Marsh.
Grassroots groups protesting the Trump administration say the resignation of National Security Advisor Mike Flynn is a signal Trump's ties to Russia need to be investigated.
The question was made famous during the Watergate scandal. What did the president know and when did he know it? Now, just over 3 weeks into the Trump administration, some are asking the same question. National Security Advisor Mike Flynn's apparent lies about contacts with Russia sparked his resignation on Monday. Now, even GOP senators such as John McCain say it's time to investigate President Trump's ties to Russia. John Raidenwater with the grassroots organization Peace Action agrees.
It's absolutely an important question. You know, you just look at the president's statements, he's resonating with kind of backdoor outreach to the Russians.
Flynn tendered his resignation after reports that then Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates warned the administration 3 weeks ago that Flynn may have been compromised by Russia. White House spokesman Sean Spicer said Trump asked for the resignation not because of legal issues, but trust issues. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
For this week's News Brief, Post Independent publisher and editor Randy Essex muses about the rekindling of doomsday concerns with KDNK's Amy Haddon-Marsh.
What inspired you to write your recent column, The Rekindling of Doomsday Concerns?
A couple of things. During the presidential campaign, there was the report that Trump had asked during a meeting, I think, with some of his national security advisors during the campaign, well, why can't we use nukes? And I don't know if that was true. It was sort of a hearsay report, but it was disconcerting. And it also occurred to me that the level of public consciousness about nuclear weapons has really dissipated, particularly since the Berlin Wall and the Soviet Union fell. And then after the inauguration, I thought about the doomsday clock, which I hadn't thought about really for a few years, and wondered what had happened with that, and just decided that it might be useful to write something about what nuclear risks are, what we live with but don't think about every day. Where I grew up, 100 miles from Strategic Air Command headquarters, which was just outside of Omaha. And as I noted in the column, there were some Minuteman missile silos out in the farm fields near my hometown. So I don't want to scare people, but I do think that when you have a presidential candidate, Ted Cruz, saying we'll make the sand glow, we ought to look at what some of the implications of that are. And the only data set that we have about using nuclear weapons other than on an uninhabited island or in the desert is Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We really don't know what would happen if a 1 megaton or 10 megaton bomb were detonated in an area with any population at all, and we absolutely don't know what would happen if there were multiple detonations.
Your fear of nuclear war, as you mentioned, goes back to childhood. And in your column, you mentioned something that sounds like you developed a bit of an obsession with the yellow and black bomb shelter signs. Talk about your good luck charm. And also, I'm wondering, when you see a yellow and black radura or radiation sign, if you still look at it the same way.
I became afraid that if there was an attack, that we would have time to get to a fallout shelter, as our teacher said we probably would, and that I'd die in the fallout shelter, or that my family and I would die in the fallout shelter. So as a 9-year-old kid, I developed a superstition that whenever I saw one of those signs, I had to look at it twice. And that was in my mind, I was telling myself if the attack ever came, I would see it going in, and then I would see it coming out if I lived. And that was so deep somewhere in my mind that I actually carried it into my young adulthood.
You mentioned the doomsday clock. Talk about this and why it has moved closer to midnight.
The doomsday clock is done by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. It was started in 1947, and during the Cold War, it was as close as, I think, 2 minutes to midnight when hydrogen bombs were first tested, which are much more powerful than the weapons that were used in Japan. And then it fell back during the first strategic arms limitation talks. It got closer to midnight when Reagan stopped talks for a while and proposed Star Wars. The scientists who set the doomsday clock some years ago added climate change and certain other global risks to what they factor into that, and they think that that increases desperation, that it increases the risk of global cataclysm in addition to nuclear weapons. And of course, they're concerned too about the large amounts of nuclear material in, I think there are 47 countries now with nuclear material, which if it's not properly inventoried and secured, could be used to create a suitcase bomb, which would be a low-yield, highly portable device that probably would be set off in an urban area by terrorists. The irony of that is, and I mentioned it in the column, is that these massive nuclear arsenals that the United States and Russia have are absolutely useless to prevent that or to retaliate against that.
That does it for this week's news brief on KDNK. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
You can read Randy Essex's columns at postindependent.com. The Garfield County Planning Commission continued a public hearing last week about rezoning the Battlement Mesa PUD to include an injection well. At a meeting the next night, Ursa Resources offered the community a deal. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh has more.
When Eric Schmela, representative for Battlement Mesa landowners, withdrew the application for an injection well zone inside the Battlement Mesa PUD at the Garfield County Planning Commission meeting last week, he didn't mention public outcry as one of the reasons. But at a community meeting in Battlement Mesa the next night, Matt Honeycutt, operations manager for Ursa Resources, suggested that this could be the reason for the company's change of plans.
We're looking at eliminating the injection well from the B pad and moving it to the A pad. Because of the B pad, right, we've read the concerns. We have similar concerns. The intake is upriver, upgradient. The what-if factor comes into play, that if this were to fail, this were to fail, this were to fail, what if? We can apply all the mitigation that we want, and there's still going to be a simple concern there. So we've eliminated that.
Honeycutt told the crowd of about 75 people that Ursa wants to move the injection well from B pad to A pad, which is further away from the Colorado River and the community's water intake.
If anything were to happen, that water would exit the A pad and head to the west, completely away from the water intake, and it's actually, I want to say it's close to 2,000 feet to the actual main river channel, where the other well was about 600.
Overall, Ursa has plans for 5 natural gas well pads, A, B, D, L, and M, and a pipeline. Phase 1 of the plan includes B pad and D pad and the pipeline. Construction on D pad is due to begin on February 21st. even though IHRSA and Eric Schmela requested a continuance from the PNZ, the delay is only for 30 days. Honeycutt says it's a timing issue.
The permitting time frames on the SUP process and everything else is typically about 12 months, and it's even longer on an injection well in particular. So, if we start drilling on the B and the D, and we start completing on our phase one plans, there comes a time where we get into a crossroads where if we don't have another pad to get to, we're not completing, and then we're faced with an issue of overwhelming water.
In other words, if the injection well inside the PUD is not approved in time, it will result in excess water that will need to be hauled out, which will increase truck traffic within the community. Honeycutt said there are currently three injection wells around the PUD and that the fourth one, proposed for the A pad inside the PUD, is crucial.
We're only allowed to put X amount of barrels down each well. They all vary by a little bit. And the overall development, when we go into full production mode, our water flows will be greater than 3 and a little bit less than 4. So we're trying to come up with this plan so we can inject all of that water into final production mode without trucking it all over the area.
He also talked about what residents can expect with phase 2 of operations inside the PUD, which includes construction of the rest of the well pads. One of these pads is the M pad, which would be in the middle of the community golf course. IHRSA also wants to move the L pad farther away from homes, but make it bigger with 33 wells. Honeycutt told the crowd that if IHRSA gets approval for the changes on the L pad and an injection well inside the PUD on the A pad, it will not develop the pad on the golf course.
We can get the L as designed, the A as designed with the injection. I'm telling you all right now, write it down, M pad will never happen.
Dave Devaney, head of the watchdog group Battlement Concerned Citizens, calls it name your poison.
We didn't want a natural gas operator in our neighborhood to begin with. So, you know, it becomes a situation where they say, well, would you rather have an injection well or additional truck traffic? Well, we don't want either one.
He told KDNK that citizens will object to any injection well inside the PUD boundaries.
I know that's at odds with the operator, certainly, and the regulations of the COGCC. And it'll be interesting to see if the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment give their blessing to this different location or not.
The Garfield County Planning Commission has called a public hearing on the issue for March 8th. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.